afternoon. I'd like to welcome you to the March 14th Hammond County Board of Commissioners and ask you to please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Clerk Canine, roll call, please.
Commissioner Loeffler?
Here.
Commissioner Aaron's?
Here.
Commissioner Mapes?
Here.
Commissioner Ginnup?
Here.
Commissioner Gutowski?
Here.
Commissioner White?
Here.
Commissioner Kukes?
Here.
Next item on our agenda, commissioners, is the approval of the agenda as presented.
Also move. Second.
We have a motion to second. Any discussion on the agenda? Hearing none. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. We are now to the point of the consent agenda. The items on the consent agenda are before you. Any commissioner wishing to remove one can do so. If not, looking for a motion to approve the consent agenda.
Chair, I move to approve the consent agenda and all items contained therein and authorize the county administrator to sign the attached items on behalf of the Board of Commissioners.
Second.
We have a second. Numerous seconds. You'll pick one, Susie. Roll call, please.
Commissioner Gutowski?
Yes.
Commissioner Ginnup?
Yes.
Commissioner Mapes?
Yes.
Commissioner Loeffler?
Yes.
Commissioner Kukes?
Yes.
Commissioner White?
Yes.
Commissioner Aaron's?
Yes.
Motion carries. Thank you very much. We're now to the part of the agenda for public comment. Anyone who wishes to address the board can come to the podium. Please state your name and you have 3 minutes. No one's rushing forward. Anyone wishing to address the board? Seeing no one coming forward, we are to Bay Bluffs. And Lisa, you have yourself and a few friends.
I do. I was really hoping there'd be public comment.
They're all waiting to hear your report.
Just saying. Jeepers. Tatum's getting that presentation ready.
Oh, Tatum's ready.
Tatum's ready. I'm ready. Good evening. I think it's been a couple of years since we have been in front of the Board of Commissioners, so I'm glad to be here to bring everybody up to speed on how life has been across the Bay. For those that I haven't met yet, there's a couple of you that I don't know. I'm Lisa Ashley. I am the administrator at Bay Bluffs. I've been there since about 2014. Tonight I'm going to give you just a brief overview for anyone on the commission or in the audience tonight that doesn't know about Bay Bluffs, who we are and what we do. I'll give you a little bit of background on what we've done the last 4 years in surviving COVID, and then share with you our plans for recovery. I very much welcome your questions and anything that comes to mind as we're going through this presentation. I want to be able to answer your questions. If I can't answer them tonight, because I get really nervous doing public presentations and I don't have that data at top of mind, I will certainly get it back to you. So. Our road to recovery is, I liken it to being a turtle. Slow and steady wins the race. And I'll share that with you, a mantra a little bit later. If you haven't been to Bay Bluffs recently, we are working through several renovations thanks to County Millage. I was going to have two board members here tonight, but Craig Lively is here from the Department of Health and Human Services Board who oversees Bay Bluffs, and I have a few staff, everybody back there, who are also here and happy to address any questions that you may have. We have a pretty exceptional team that I think Emmett County can be very proud of. Again, briefly, our roots as a county medical care facility are through Public Act 280. We are designated as the county poor farm, and those were created to support the elderly and infirm of Michigan counties. Just fun fact, I had someone from Greenwood Cemetery deliver some information to me last week, as a matter of fact, very old historical information from the 1800s about how Emmett County handled the poor and infirm, and it is a history of the county poor farm, in case anybody is curious about that. Our building was built in the mid-1960s, and we serve as the safety net for the most vulnerable medically and financially in our county. Our mission is to provide exceptional care with compassion and dignity. PA 280, as I mentioned, puts the oversight of our governance on the Department of Health and Human Services Board, which is a three-member board of directors, two whom you appoint, and one who the governor appoints. And Craig is one of our county commission appointees, and he's been a great addition to our team. The difference between a nursing home and assisted living, for those that may or may not know the difference, a nursing home requires some sort of a medical diagnosis to live there, and generally speaking, we are paid through Medicare or Medicaid benefits. We have a very limited portion of our income that is private pay. Generally, a private pay situation will be assisted living and will be a lot less acuity, meaning a lot less complex care required. So the services that we currently offer at Bay Bluffs are short-term skilled rehabilitation services. So for those that have hip replacement, knee replacement, need some perking up after a stroke or have adult failure to thrive, those sorts of situations where they're with us for usually about 20 days and then they're discharged home, hopefully for the rest of their rehab. Long-term care is primarily what our business model is based on the Medicaid benefit. About 75% of our residents who live with us long-term are paid through the Medicaid benefit through the state of Michigan. Those folks generally move in and finish their life with us. We provide quite a bit of comfort and end-of-life care, if you can imagine. I did put a map here. Again, for those that may not have been in the building recently, we have 120 state-licensed and federally certified beds in the building. That is made up of 39 semi-private suites, 13 double occupancy rooms, so think of a hospital room with a divider curtain between them, and then 16 private rooms. I will tell you that the layout and makeup of the building made it very challenging during respiratory illness, COVID-19, over the last 4 years, but our team has done a tremendous job without access to several private rooms, keeping people safe, and I'll share with you some of that data shortly. The last major renovation on this building was done in 2004 and added the front two wings that I've got labeled there, Lilac and Trillium. Those neighborhoods were added at that time. And again, we are very grateful that the millage was allowed to be on the ballot in 21. We have had a lot of work to do on the infrastructure, and again, I'll share some updates with you. The last 4 years, however, we have been battling what has probably been one of the most, I think, incredible experiences that any of us who've had a career in healthcare have ever lived through. We had a plan, we had a great strategic plan, and in the first quarter of 2020, we were on our way to achieving the goals, both financially and with our census, to get us to the point where we are financially viable and self-sustaining, and the pandemic hit. And we have struggled with that mightily, and we have overcome significantly. Within the first 18 months, Bay Bluffs and other nursing homes in the state of Michigan had to incorporate more than 500 rule changes into our operations, both at the state and federal level. Many of those infection control protocols, prevention measures, reporting measures, and operating changes are still in effect. We've had to adapt our operating plan based on how we've had to respond to the worst healthcare crisis in 100 years. And we are still operating in a preventative measure. We have been going now more than 1,400 days and will continue to do so. I think nursing homes are the only entity in the country, probably the world, that are still faced with COVID precautions, prevention, and reporting requirements. I am so proud of the team at Bay Bluffs. When it comes to how we have been able to achieve and maintain our quality goals, at the same time trying to prevent significant outbreak of COVID-19 in our building. We had 47 total resident cases in 4 years. If you recall, at the end of February 2020, the beginning of March 2020, there were nursing homes in the state of Washington that were devastated and decimated by COVID-19. That was pretty terrifying for us, trying to prepare for what was coming our way. And we've only had 47 resident cases of COVID in 4 years. We have had 2 deaths attributed to COVID-19. Again, when you look at the data nationwide, nursing homes were hit the hardest, being a congregate living site, and our team did, I don't even know that I can find the words to describe what an incredible job they did preventing illness and spread to our resident population. We did have 162 staff cases of COVID-19 over the last 4 years. Again, thanks to our prevention efforts, we were able to keep staff, residents, and their families safe. I think a couple of the interesting facts, we were able to provide free COVID testing for our residents, their families, and our staff throughout. We processed almost 24,000 COVID tests in our building. Those were processed and reported by a handful of us, most of us here in the room. We learned how to be lab techs, and we learned how to do data entry and reporting that we never thought we would have to do. But again, all of the effort that we made has led to very high quality outcomes for those who live with us. Another fun fact is we've spent over $250,000 on personal protective equipment, gowns, gloves, masks, goggles, face shields, anything and everything in between that we've had to use to keep people safe. And that compares to maybe $1,000 or $2,000 a year that we would spend on the same type of equipment during an influenza outbreak, for example, under normal circumstances. So that's quite a significant amount of money to invest in that kind of equipment. On the next slide, there's lots of data here. I'm not going to go into all of that, but just so that the community is aware, COVID-19 still exists. Between COVID-19, influenza, and RSV, those are still a risk to our resident population. We are still on heightened alert today, but we know so much more than we did 4 years ago. We have so many more opportunities to protect our residents, and we are in a better place to be able to do that. Overall, we have certainly persevered through really what has been a very unknown situation for so many of us. And again, we are still in the battle. 2023 has been and was a year of recovery for us. When we started out at the beginning of the COVID pandemic, one of the things I said was, from start to finish, my expectation was this was going to be a 5-year ordeal. Why I thought that, I can't tell you at the time, but that's what we've been sticking with, is this is about a 5-year ordeal from the beginning and the discovery and the prevention efforts that we've led in our building to the recovery phase. 5 years is what we're looking at, and 2023 was year 3 for us. Our strategic plan in 2023 was built on the assumptions that you see on the slide. The need for our services continues. We have still today a wait list of over 60 individuals wanting to be in our facility and needing our care. There is a caregiver shortage. Of course, any of you that work in or own any business know that staffing and worker shortage is pretty significantly impacting all of us. The healthcare industry, and I'll show you in a few slides, particularly nursing homes, have been hit the hardest through the first couple of years of the pandemic. Those that are coming to us sicker and with more complex illnesses because they've waited for care for 3 years, or they've been impacted by things like long COVID. That has made a huge difference in how folks are coming into our building and the needs that they have for care. We know that reimbursement changes are coming. The state of Michigan has postponed now for a second year reimbursement changes for the Medicaid program, specifically to room and board for long-term care for skilled nursing services like ours at Bay Bluffs. We anticipate that sometime this year we will see a reconfiguration of the reimbursement model, but until then we are trying to live in limbo between a cost-based reimbursement system and a quality-based reimbursement system, which we anticipate is coming next. And obviously, quality of care is key. I'm really proud and will share with you the quality awards we've been able to achieve and be recognized for despite the challenges that we have faced throughout the pandemic. As I mentioned before, we have 120 available beds in our building. Over the last few years, we've had anywhere from 45 to 50 of those beds in a holding pattern, what we call a non-available bed plan through the Medicaid program, because we haven't had the staff to be able to safely bring more people into the building and care for them. My primary responsibility is to the people who live there first and making sure that we have the proper safe staffing levels to care for them with higher acuity. And so the non-available bed plan has been in place. Roughly three quarters of all Michigan nursing homes still have non-available bed plans in place because we are all facing the same challenges when it comes to the staffing issues. We are in sort of the reset mode. The next slide shows you our COVID response. This is one of the best graphs that we found to illustrate kind of the initial peak in response to major or significant change in the organization and operationally. We're probably midway through the recovery stage at this point in the game, and our expectation is that we will come out of this at the end of my five-year projection stronger and better able to support those who will need our services long into the future, which looking at demographic data in Emmett County is a significant need. Our roadmap to recovery, we started in February of 2023, so just about a year ago, with our the DHHS board and our staff doing some additional strategic planning to say, okay, how do we get ourselves into this recovery phase? What does that look like? The key strategy for us was workforce development. If we do not have a stable workforce, we cannot care for more people in our building. If we cannot care for more people in our building, we don't have the revenue to continue. It's an unfortunate cyclical situation. We also identified that we need to stay focused on quality, that we're not going to sacrifice what our residents need and deserve as far as their care goes, because that's what our community expects of us to be doing and providing for them as the county poor farm. And so our focus over the last year has been workforce capacity building. How do we retain the current staff that we have, those that stuck it out with us through the first 3 years of this adventure with COVID? How do we retain those folks? What do we need to have in place to make sure that their wages are fair and competitive, their benefits are fair and competitive, that we're helping to put systems in place that if there's something going on outside of the work situation, we have a success coach to help with some of those things that might be impacting their ability to come to work, to be on time, to, you know, have childcare needs met, all of those sorts of things. So how do we retain the current group of staff, and then how do we appeal to new folks that maybe have never worked in healthcare before or who have worked in a different part of the healthcare sector? How do we encourage them to come into an environment that has been so devastated by COVID-19 and unfortunately by negative stereotypes and connotations about what living and working in a nursing home might be? So those were our challenges in 2023, and we had a significant emphasis on not only the recruitment element, but as I mentioned, retention. Organizational culture is everything when it comes to retaining your staff. If you're not open, if you're not willing to look at problems and solve them together, if you're not willing to come to the table and interact in a way that helps make things better tomorrow than we were today, that doesn't go very far. And we've had success with that from the board level to my executive team and to the frontline staff, which has been very exciting, and we've been able to retain staff. So just to mention again that those who stayed with us through the pandemic had to live through some really what I would consider scary times. Again, we didn't know what was coming at us. We were we were attempting to provide the best care that we could in the most home-like setting while gearing up like we were trying to battle Ebola. And it was a bit challenging. So that team is very resilient. They are very brave, and I will tell you they love the people that they care for. On the next slide, from a workforce capacity building perspective, just some data that I think is important for you to know about Bay Bluff specifically. There are nursing homes across the country, in the state of Michigan, and even locally, that have 100% staff turnover rate. That means 100% of their staff leave in a 12-month period. We have an 80% retention rate. It means 80% of our staff stay with us. That's pretty amazing. We're really proud of that. Our leadership team has worked very hard to make this a place that people want to work, so that it's a place that people want to live and receive care. Nationally, nursing homes across the country lost upwards of 200,000 employees during the pandemic. That already compounded about 500,000 workers that we were already anticipating we would be low because of the aging of the nursing workforce that we've known has been coming for 30 years. So you add almost 1 million people not in the healthcare workforce, and that makes things quite challenging. Right now, the national projections are that nursing home workforce will not get back to normal pre-pandemic workforce until 2027. Again, my plan is a 5-year plan. We should be, if we can maintain our organizational culture, we maintain our focus on quality and caring for our people, both our staff and our resident population, we should be ahead of the curve and beat that 2027 projection. The next couple of slides just are additional demographic information. The long-term care, worse labor shortage than any other healthcare sector, this is just an illumination that nursing homes, even more so than hospitals, were the place people left during the pandemic. Our data shows that in, I'm gonna put my glasses on because I cannot read my own slide. In 2020, at the height of the pandemic beginning, we had about 176 employees. You can see that dropped to 153 in 2022, which was our, I would say, the peak or the valley, the worst part from a census perspective and a staffing perspective for the organization at 124. In 2023, we ended the year with 127 staff. And in 2024, if I added where we are currently, the first 2.5 months of the year, we are already significantly up. We just had 5 new employees join us in orientation this week, including nurses, nurse aides, and resident assistants. And Jess, our HR director, I'm sure could give me the high sign about how many nursing applications she's received already this week. So we're on our way up. And again, I want to emphasize that without safe staffing, we cannot bring more people into our building. When 80% of our residents have dementia, their needs are significantly higher than those without. Supervision is critically important, and without having enough manpower to make sure that their environment is safe, it becomes a critical safety issue for our resident population. Go ahead and skip ahead to a couple more. There we go, a couple of our amazing staff members. Admissions and discharges, I wanted to make sure that you saw that, you know, we had a significant change in the number of people moving into our building. Obviously, throughout COVID, there were periods of time where we were not allowed to have admissions. If we had COVID in the building and we had an outbreak going on, we were not allowed to admit. We had to maintain a COVID unit separate from the rest of our resident population, and that had to be available at all times. So that limited the number of beds we had available. But I wanted you to see that in 2023, we had 128 admissions total for the year, 129 discharges. We were a very, very busy team of people. We had a total of 70 beds available in 2023. So that means we turned over those beds not quite twice by the numbers. And again, our resident population, our revenue mix is about 75% Medicaid, so that's our long-term care population. The 14% is Medicare, which pays for the short-term rehab stay, and then 11% of our revenue is private pay, and a majority of those folks live with us on a long-term basis. On the next slide, just some additional facts for you on our reimbursement. Medicaid reimburses us based on about 75% of our actual cost. So they reimburse us based on how much it costs us to provide that care, but they only reimburse us 75% of that cost. I'm not really sure what else to say about that other than it makes it a bit challenging to make those numbers balance. But we do a darn good job making that happen. And as I mentioned also, the state is looking at updating that reimbursement model because the system is old and outdated. It's been in place since the, I think, the late 80s when a skilled nursing facility benefit was in place. We're looking at a new benefit to focus specifically on quality and elements related to quality care, which our team has put ourselves in a position to reap the benefits of that reimbursement change.
Where do they expect you to come up with the rest of the money?
Where do they expect?
What's the expectation? If they're only going to pay you 75%,
right?
What's their expectation?
Yeah. Well, things like private pay, increasing the private pay rate to offset the difference for the Medicaid rate. Having a larger number of people in the building on a Medicare short length of stay, that actually is a higher reimbursement rate. So the more folks that we have in our building at a higher reimbursement rate helps to offset that Medicaid census reimbursement loss. This is one of the reasons why county medical care facilities, we actually get paid a little bit more than those that are owned by a private equity company or those that are not-for-profit, because we are expected to care for more folks on that Medicaid benefit, so they pay us a little bit more every day to do that. That's our incentive to care for the poor.
They still know you're not fully funded.
Correct. We make them aware of that every time we're on a phone call.
That's nuts.
It is nuts. It is totally nuts. But we're going to get there. We're working very hard with the state of Michigan to help them craft the new benefit based on quality, based on staffing measures, based on our annual surveys and our life safety reports. Those are the kinds of things that really need to be what our benefit is based on. That's what makes us very different from, again, other ownership types, is that we focus on those that need us the most, that have no other place to be for the kind of care that they need. We don't, for all intents and purposes, cherry pick those higher paying services, because that's not our primary mission and purpose. Back to the law from 1939, PA 280, where we are to care for the poor and infirm of our county.
Thank you.
But we
so
do
I want
need
to stay
to
on Lake Street the rest of my life.
We we need to get
Bay Bluffs will enable me to do that.
as far as workforce development goes, you know, we were able to contract with a marketing consultant who has helped us. We're about 6 months ahead of the curve when it comes to other county medical care facilities and their sort of rebranding, if you will, in the way of recruitment, because we got a grant from the Petoskey Harbor Springs Area Community Foundation, and we've also received some funds through the Michigan County Medical Care Facilities Council. Those two opportunities have helped us preserve operating funds, because we don't have a lot of those, and still invest in things that are what I would consider a luxury, is having someone helping us with things like our social media and updating websites and press releases and setting up interviews to tell our story on the radio and all of those things that we don't have the manpower or the skill set in our building to do. These grants have helped us make that happen. We have also developed over the last year and a half, we had a good relationship with North Central Michigan College. Their RN, their registered nurse program, we always had students in the building doing their clinical work. We have helped them as advisors to their LPN program, which is new. They've got the first cohort of students in that this year. Two of our nurse aides are in that LPN program. We're really proud of them for taking the next step in their career. And then we've also partnered with them to relaunch a nurse aide training program at the college that they had, it had been on hiatus for quite a few years. So Sonia Bosley, our director of nursing, and one of our other nurses that provides direct care in the building, they are the instructors for that program, and we're really proud of the fact that they've had two amazing classes providing amazing training, and we already, the class for April is half full. So we're building a reputation as a training site and a training resource for nurse aides, and for the college and all of their health sciences programs, their success is our success. So anything we can do to partner with the college to make sure that their nursing programs are full, that people are engaged and wanting to be a part of that locally, makes a huge difference for us and the ability to hire local folks to work in our facility on a regular basis. So we're excited about that partnership. And as I mentioned, despite the challenges we had, Babe Loss was recognized nationally. We were recognized as number 3 in the state of Michigan for a nursing home our size, based on our quality, our staffing, our COVID response, and customer experience. And that's the first time that we've ever received any recognition of this nature. So we received the Newsweek Best Nursing Homes, and then we also received a U.S. News and World Report. Through COVID, we were able to maintain a 5-star rating through the Centers for Medicare Medicaid Services that's related to our quality outcomes, both for those short-term folks who are with us for rehab and go home, and the positive outcomes that they have, as well as the outcomes with our long-term resident population and for our staffing. The federal government is looking at a new staffing mandate for nursing homes with the expectation that sometime this spring it will be known what their expectation is. I'm proud to say that Bay Bluffs is at or above the staffing mandate that will be put into place this spring. We take resident safety and quality of care very, very seriously. So it's been crazy. But we're on the upswing. The first quarter of 2024, we have more staff. We are seeing an opportunity to have steady census growth. And we're finding that the early results of our retention and recruitment projects, things like I think it's a 15% increase in viable candidates that are applying for positions with us. We have an increase in nursing applications, as I mentioned, just in the first couple of months of this year alone. And then we continue to look for ways to expand on our engagement with local partners so that we can continue with our road to recovery, because our community needs us. Just, you know, for a little visual and thinking, the 7 of you as commissioners, at least 2 of you will need a nursing home, possibly Bay Bluffs, because you'll have dementia. And at least 2 of you will need short-term rehab at some point in your life. And the rest of you will be caregivers to someone that at one point or another, you won't be able to manage their care at home. If you haven't experienced Bay Bluffs yet, you will. Let's talk capital improvements, because, again, as I mentioned, we haven't been here before the Board of Commissioners since 2021 when we were asking for your help to renovate the building. I'm really proud and of the work that our team has done in conjunction with county staff. It's been a long time coming. I cannot sing the praises of Dave A. enough. Thank Dave you. A., you are my rock star. We have been able to replace a boiler system that was more than 20 years old that is already saving us in our utility costs because of the efficiency. It's amazing. We've been able to complete at least one of our neighborhoods is now completely renovated. We've got a kitchenette and a bathroom in that neighborhood to finish, but our residents and their families are seeing and feeling the benefit of a refresh in those rooms with updated HVAC and furniture and a much more home-like environment. We've had some kitchen plumbing issues, but the kitchen is in the oldest part of the building. So we have plumbing infrastructure that is from 1965. And after a while, that tends to not work so well. So definitely investing in that infrastructure. When you walk in the building, you don't necessarily see, ta-da, tremendous improvement when you initially. It's all the stuff behind the scenes that, again, 75% of our total cost paid by Medicaid does not cover. This capital millage is a lifesaver for our building, and it is a lifesaver for our residents who need to live there. We've been able to replace old and broken down kitchen equipment. Our laundry room and laundry system has all been updated also in the last couple of years. And we are in the process now, I don't know how many projects are on Dave's list, but painting, new furniture, additional plumbing, HVAC, windows, in one of our other neighborhoods so that we can have that ready to go. Our goal is by the first part of August, at which point we will have more than 80 beds available for residents of Emmett and surrounding counties to receive care, and we will be staffed and ready for that as well.
New beds?
So,
new beds?
We replace beds as we need to. We
additional beds?
Nope, those will be beds that are in our holding pattern right now that will come back online.
That's what I mean, coming out.
Yes, they will come out of the on hold and be back online.
And when do you expect those to be back?
Our goal is by the first part of August.
Okay, great, thank you.
Yep. So we have five neighborhoods, as we call them. We're currently occupying three of those five. We're doing renovation in a fourth, and then that fifth neighborhood, we need to figure out what becomes of that after we get through number four. And the next slide just shows you some pictures of our renovated rooms that are a little more modern and comfortable than they have been in the past. COVID. It's been all about COVID the last almost 4 years. And I appreciate the opportunity to share with you the challenges that we faced. Don gets to hear about them every month at our meetings. But I'm most excited and hopeful that over the next 12 months, you will continue to hear more about our quality of care. You will continue to hear more about the growth in our staff and the growth in our census, which then in turn leads to a growth in our ability to be financially in a position to carry on and move forward into the future. We have appreciated, again, I can't say thank you enough for the capital millage. Thank you to the Board of Commissioners and the voters. That has been a lifesaver for the building and for our resident population.
How old is Gordon?
Do you know, my friend?
Oh, yes,
I believe at last that I checked, 102. The average age for residents at Bay Bluffs is 85, which is significantly older than most nursing homes in the state and the country. Just another fun fact.
2020 year, you had a staff of 176. Do you consider that fully staffed or not? Not quite.
That I have a different answer to that today than I did then. Then that was probably not fully staffed. Today, our operations have changed. We have identified opportunities to cross-train, to be more efficient in our operations. So honestly, I don't know what fully staffed looks like as far as total numbers of employees. That's a great question. That's one of the things that we've been talking about at our board meetings. What does that look like? What's the ideal number of residents in the building for a break even? And what does the right number of staff look like? And those things have all been impacted by how we've responded to COVID and how we've had to change our operations because of that. Sorry. I'd love to give you a solid number, but I don't have that just yet. Any other questions?
Yes, I have one. In order to have a 100% occupancy rate, how many employees would you have in order to have a full staff to take care of them?
Again, I think that depends on the type of residents we're talking about in those 120 beds. We would have to be closer to that 176 number.
How many do you have now?
127. We're over 139, I believe, is our okay. Jessica, help me out. 139.
So, Lisa, so just so you know, my aunt a couple years ago was a resident at Bay Bluffs, and she stayed there for several months until she walked on. And her immediate family, they were extremely pleased with the care she received there.
Thank you.
And they appreciate it. And so I think it's extremely important. Bay Bluffs has to be successful, and our community has to make sure that we do what it takes to make that happen. It has to be here. Our population is aging.
Yes.
And so I would expect the demand for that type of service is going to be very high in the next 10, 20, whatever, maybe fewer than those years.
Yes.
And I always hear that the main issue is staffing, right? And there are different levels of nursing certification, I think, right? What's the breakdown? I don't really know what the names of all the certifications are. I know there's RNs and LPNs and nurses' aides. What are the breakdown on what you need as far as ratios of those kind of services or those kind of certifications and that sort of thing?
So our primary staff population who provide direct care for residents are certified nurse aides.
Okay.
Is
that the program that they have at the college?
Yes.
Now? Yeah. Okay.
Yes,
and
that is a CINA.
That's a certification that can be done in less than a year, I think.
It's
right?
A 2-week program.
Okay.
And the hardest job in the building.
I'm sure it's a difficult job. Yeah,
it is the hardest job in the building. You know, we like to run between 8 and 10 residents per one CINA on any given shift. And so depending on how many neighborhoods we have open, our largest neighborhood is 28 residents. So we have a minimum of 3 of those CINAs on each shift in order to address those ratios. Now, short-term rehab, depending on the census we have there and what kind of medical needs they have, whether they have IVs or wound dressing changes or any plethora of things that you could find medically that someone would need, that staffing ratio is going to look a little bit different based on the acuity of that resident population.
Mostly CINAs, and then you're going to need...
Yes.
Do you need RNs as well?
Or? Yes. We have been very fortunate that a majority of our nursing staff are registered nurses.
Okay.
Most other nursing homes have licensed practical nurses.
Okay.
But again, from a quality of care perspective and what was available to us, registered nurses are the primary population. But with the college's launching of an LPN program here locally, the expectation that there will be more nurses available to us locally through the college program is a huge win for us.
So you have this reimbursement program that's reimbursing you 75% of your cost and all this, and you really need to have the highest wages in the area, right, if you're going to get people in there.
It's
How
tough
does
to
that
compete.
Work?
It's tough to compete with the hospital. We're all very fortunate that we have a regional referral center, but for the rest of us in the healthcare sector as employers, wages and benefits and competing with the hospital wages and benefits are a bit of a challenge. We're banking on culture. We're banking on a better work environment. We are banking on better staffing ratios. And I would say our resident population is pretty darn awesome. So, you know, the people that you care for, it makes a difference in whether you want to be there or not. It was interesting. We had the first request by a nurse who applied with us to job shadow with one of our nursing staff. And that was the first time we'd been asked that question, and he came in and job shadowed, and we liked him as much as he liked us, It was a great opportunity for us to see what the other was like. And those are the kinds of experiences we want people to have, and we want them to tell their friends in healthcare. If you're not happy working in a different healthcare setting, come check us out. We do our best to put our money where our mouth is and take good care of you and have a good values, mission, quality-driven outcome.
So some of the other industries around here, when they have shortages, they rely on guest workers, international workers, or bringing people in on visas and stuff
yes.
like that. Have you considered anything like that, or is that a possibility? Or
we have considered that. The cost to do that is quite large,
yeah.
and the when it comes to healthcare workers, and our primary need being nurse aides, they do not. There's not an international program for that particular
right.
skill set. There is for nursing, for registered nurses, and for physicians and for some of the other healthcare positions, but there's not for a certified nurse aide. We have several staff who hail from other parts of the globe, and they have family members who would love to be here, but they're not able to get here to do that work.
Because of the certification or because of the visas?
Because of the length of time it takes to get the visas.
Yeah. If the employer gets the visas, is it a little easier?
Nope.
No.
It's not. And again, the cost
yeah.
for us. We looked at it. Actually, the Medical Care Facility Council looked at that as a group, as a state,
yeah.
Trying to identify whether or not that's something we could invest in as a group. And it just wasn't going to be worth the cost benefit for the group of us to do. It wasn't going to be bring enough staff to be able to make that happen.
Okay.
So we've looked at that. The other thing we're proud of, we're probably one of the few nursing homes that did not use contract staff throughout the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
We found the risk to be too great. There's not a commitment to the quality,
right.
to the outcomes, to the organizational policy and protocol. And those are words that have come from my other county care facility partners in other parts of the state. So we have not utilized contract staff. It has solely been our team that has provided care.
I had a conversation last fall with a woman I met from Jamaica, and she had come here a couple years ago originally for working in the summer, you know, with the tourism industry. And she ended up staying the last few years, and she has a daughter back in Jamaica who would love to come also. And she'd like to get into the medical field, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I was thinking, what about this two-week training course at the college?
Right.
If you could get a few people like that to come in and go through the course, maybe provide a couple of rooms for housing or something for
yep.
a little while until they could get on their feet. Just an idea that occurred to me, and I'm sure you've already thought of it or looked into it. But
that's one of the things that's on our little
yeah,
list
okay.
of what creative things might we be able to do.
Yeah.
Those are that's what I think also distinguishes us as an employer. We have tuition reimbursement,
mm-hmm.
particularly for those that are interested in nursing. So the two nurse aides that we have right now going through the college's LPN program, we've identified funds in our budget to help them go through that program. We have nursing loan repayment. So some of our RNs that are recent grads that still have student loans, we're able through the IRS has certain limits for us, but we're able to help them pay back those loans. So we've identified funds within our operating budget. While we are not able to necessarily change base wage for everybody, we are able to do some of these other creative things to try to recruit and retain our staff.
Speaking of retaining, if you're providing these benefits, do they sign a contract for 3-4 years then at least? If they're paying for their school, I mean.
Right.
You want to pay for it and have them bail on you.
Right, exactly. So we do have them fill out an application and go through that process. What we have found is that if they're the right fit for the organization, they're going to stay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I imagine you get some pretty loyal employees.
We have tremendously loyal employees.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. They're amazing.
Lisa and I toured few years ago, you were having, I've seen the big ticket items, but you had things like tubs and lifts that were probably brought over with the Mayflower. I just wondered.
I think so. They have been replaced.
They've been upgraded.
They have been replaced, yes.
Any other questions for Lisa?
Awesome. Thank you for your time and your questions. If you've come up with anything else, you've got my card, let me know. I'm happy to be here more often if Dave lets me. And again, I cannot say any more positive things about Dave A, as we call him, Dave B, Dave A, has just been a tremendous help to us. So I say positive things about you too, but I haven't seen you.
You're the B, not the A.
Dave A. Thank you very much.
You did good. Thanks.
Thank you.
Oh gosh, video. Would you play the video, Taylor?
Oh, okay. Is this
what
we're gonna be watching for? Yeah, you're in it.
I've seen it. I've seen your ads in some unexpected places just popping up lately too. That were, I'm like,
yeah. And did not ever expect to work in a nursing home. Learned more about myself as a leader. I've learned more about myself as a parent. I've learned more about myself as a granddaughter and a sibling and a spouse, thanks to the lessons I've learned from our residents.
Big Lots is a place that takes care of people, and that is not just residents, that's also its employees. If you feel like you might have that calling to take care of the elderly, it's a great place to start and will help you through your healthcare journey, whether that is just coming in as a resident assistant, taking the SANA class, or eventually moving on to nursing. It is a really fantastic and rewarding place to be, especially if you're even remotely thinking about getting into the healthcare field. It's a great team, and you should take the next step.
Well, I certainly hope all of you are proud of what we're doing at Bay Bluffs.
One other comment, Lisa, is the people that are in Bay Bluffs, they're not just elderly people. They built Emmett County, and the stories that probably were, that you could tell us of who they were, what they were in their career, whether they're in a wheelchair, walker, or maybe have dementia, would probably be amazing.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
I know I've got a friend in there.
Thank you, Lisa. Thank you all for the hard work you're doing there.
See you in 25 years. I'll move to the other end of Lake Street then.
Should be shorter. All right. Dave A has had his time mentioned. Dave B, it's your time.
My report's pretty short tonight. We'll start off on staffing. As you see on our report, we have four openings left. That changes pretty quickly, but the good news right now, we've got applications out, and we only have four job openings right now. You can see the new hires, and Denise and her staff have been busy filling these positions. We do have the beginning of our, we've just started our part-time recruitment. You'll see our flyer in there, and once again, we'll have kind of that bonus program. If you stay long enough, you get a little extra bonus in your salary. That seemed to really help. I think we have 16 or 18 positions in Parks and Recreation that we're trying to fill, some throughout. If you're interested, we're looking for people to work at the locks this year. We have a turnover in staff, so if you want a great job in the summer outside, come and help us out at the locks.
What's the age limit or the minimum age?
Prefer adults.
Okay.
18. You will see one of the events that just happened was Emmett County did their coffee with the inspector. We attended it. Some of us here attended that. There was over 100 people that showed up to that great event, a couple hours of what's going on in the building world, and Marty and staff gave a really nice update. The conference, the Michigan Council Legislation Conference is coming up. I know two of you have signed up. If anybody else is interested in going to that, please get a hold of Priscilla. Parks and Recreation, we've got some of the programs listed, what's going on. Two of the construction projects that have just been completed at the fairgrounds in the EQ building, if you ever have had a meeting in there, you know how that thing echoes, and they just put a drop ceiling in there. Now you can actually hold a meeting. It's very nice in there, and the acoustics are much better. And then at the rec hall, you'll see that while the season's down, they went in there and re-epoxied all the floors in there, and that's not a good picture. I just saw the photos today of what it looks like, and it came out really nice. And thanks to the park staff for doing all that work. I just have a few of the open bids. April is going to be a busy month for this board approving different contracts and bids that we have on the street. And then attached is the seasonal hiring flyer. That is my report tonight.
Any questions for Mr. Boyer?
Yes, I have one. Are we making any progress in finding this staff position for the Yamba County Treasurer's Office?
We are. We just put a job description together for that and gone back and forth, and now we're just debating what that salary range looks like.
Is that a full-time position?
Full-time position.
Great. Okay. Yep. I think the board is in favor of that.
I just want to mention to Ryan, I did mention to the fairground board, and they said they got their schedule all set for the year, but definitely next year they're going to move their meetings back. So. Agnes wasn't there, but.
Any other questions for Mr. Boyer? Finance report, will that be you too?
I'll give you an excellent report. Both revenues and expenditures are on track, and we are looking good. Happy to answer any questions you might have. Ms. Gibson will be back next month, and she will give you a little bit better detail, but we are on track with revenues and expenditures at this time of the season.
Any financial questions, Mr. Porter? Hearing none, we'll move on to unfinished business. Claims and vouchers, and committee and travel vouchers.
Mr. Chair, I move the payment of the claims in the amount of $2,080,551.56 and for payments of the committee and travel vouchers in the amount of $1,145.48.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Hearing no discussion, roll call, please.
Commissioner Aaron.
Yes.
Commissioner White.
Yes.
Commissioner Coates.
Yes.
Commissioner Lofbaum.
Yes.
Commissioner Mapes.
Yes.
Commissioner Ginnup.
Yes.
Commissioner Gutowski.
Yes.
Motion carries. Moving to new business, first item is a public hearing on the MDNR Trust Fund grant application for Camp Pedasiga. Mr. Boyer?
Yes, this is a grant application to the Michigan Department of Natural Resources Trust Fund. We try to do this yearly and try to get funding through there. This is for a campground at the Camp Pedasiga to replace one of our playground structures. What you see in this packet that we presented was some conceptual drawings of what this would look like. We do those conceptual drawings to get a base so we have a dollar amount that we can go after the grant. I will tell you that it might look different than this, but there are some very tight guidelines through the trust fund when you're working with playgrounds, walkways, and those, the ADA compliance, and there's a whole chapter in there that that we need to comply with. We will work, if this is approved, you will see this come back to you for the approval, and then you will see it come back to you when we do the bid specification and actually select a playground and a structure to go in there. So you'll see this two more times. What we're asking for you tonight is to allow us to, as part of the process, we need your approval to apply for this grant.
I'd like to open the public hearing on the MDNR grant application for the Camp Pedasiga playground redevelopment. Anyone wishing to have comments, please step forward.
John Swartout. I would just like to know if the the county share, the $98,000, is in the budget or not in the budget?
This will be for next. This will be in next year's budget. This does not get funded until the following year, so this will be in our capital improvement fund.
Thank you.
Any other public comments to come forward?
Ryan, did you have anything you wanted to add to this?
Second call for public comment. Third call for public comment. I'll close the public hearing and entertain a motion from the commission.
Mr. Chair, I move that the board authorize the attached resolution supporting the submission of an application to the Michigan Department of Natural Resources Trust Fund grant program for Camp Pedasiga accessible playground redevelopment in the amount of $378,000 and authorize the county board chairman to sign the same on behalf of the Board of Commissioners.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion or questions from the commissioners, from Mr. Boyer or Ryan? Seeing none, roll call, please.
Commissioner Lofbaum?
Yes.
Commissioner Coates?
Yes.
Commissioner Mapes?
Yes.
Commissioner Ginnup?
Yes.
Commissioner White?
Yes.
Commissioner Aaron's?
Yes.
Commissioner Gadowski?
Yes. Motion carries. Moving to the next item of business, Sheriff Office Vehicle Purchase. Mr. Boyer?
Before you tonight is the replacement of 6 vehicles, 4 patrol vehicles, and 2 that they will be using for their detective. This is in the current budget. This funding is in the 2024 capital fund. This is something that was planned in our budget to replace these vehicles. They're all high mileage vehicles, and as you see in here, not only do we have the vehicles in here, we also have the equipment that goes along with it. The vehicle cost is $269,360, and then we've added the additional $70,000 to outfit each one of the vehicles. And when I say outfit, that's lights, cages, computers, cameras.
Any questions, Mr. Boyer?
I'm wondering about the bid process. And that, is that some kind of state bid?
It's a state bid.
Okay.
Yeah, Michigan puts out all kinds of vehicles the state use. So we use, that's the best prices we can get. So you'll see the next one is the same vehicle purchase for Parks and Rec is a state bid. And you'll see that we're buying trucks in Grand Rapids, we're buying trucks downstate. It's wherever that best bid is in that price from the dealership. And that's a fixed fee.
Any other questions? Hearing none, looking for a motion.
Chair, I move that the board approve the purchase of 4 Chevrolet Tahoe police vehicles, 2 Chevrolet Equinox from Berger Chevrolet in the amount of $269,360, and the upfitting of patrol units in the amount of $70,000, and authorize the county administrator to sign all necessary documents to complete the project.
Second.
Mrs. Knine will pick the second. Any further discussion, questions regarding the purchase of the seeing none, roll call, please.
Commissioner Gutowski?
Yes.
Commissioner Aaron's?
Yes.
Commissioner White?
Yes.
Commissioner Ginnup?
Yes.
Commissioner Mapes?
Yes.
Commissioner Kuntz?
Yes.
Commissioner Lofbaum?
Yes.
Motion carries. Next item on the agenda is again a purchase of a Parks and Recreation vehicle. Mr. Boyer.
There was 2 vehicles in our capital budget for Parks and Recreation. They've replaced 1 vehicle. This is the second one. This will be located up at the Headlands Park, and it's replacing a Tahoe that we have with over 140,000 miles on it. It's replacing it with a smaller
Equinox.
Four-wheel drive Equinox. Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Boyer? If not, I'll call for a motion.
I'll make that motion. Mr. Chair, I move that the board approve the purchase of a 2024 Equinox LS from Todd Winslow Buick, GMC, and Chevrolet in the amount of $26,571 and authorize the county administrator to sign all necessary documents.
Second.
We have a motion to second. Any further questions or discussion on this motion? Questions about the purchase? Seeing none, roll call, please.
Commissioner Aaron's?
Yes.
Commissioner Kuntz?
Yes.
Commissioner Mapes?
Yes.
Commissioner Gutowski?
Yes.
Commissioner Ginnup?
Yes.
Commissioner Lofbaum?
Yes.
Commissioner White?
Yes. Motion carries. Next is an item for the fair, the Autocross Event Agreement.
It's exactly what it is, to coordinate the autocross. This agreement is a $1,000 agreement, but we bring all agreements before you. This group has been doing this since 2007, and this will continue it for another 2 years.
Any questions, Mr. Boyer? Or I see Agnes back there hiding.
And you'll see, we've got, I don't know, Agnes, probably about another 6 or 8 contracts will be coming before you over the next couple months.
Looking for a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move the board approve the attached agreement with Brian and Danica Howard to promote the 24 and 2025 autocross event in amount of $1,000 per year and authorize the administrator to sign the same.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion or questions? Seeing and hearing none, roll call, please.
Commissioner Gutowski?
Yes.
Commissioner Mapes?
Yes.
Commissioner Kuntz?
Yes.
Commissioner Aaron's?
Yes.
Commissioner White?
Yes.
Commissioner Lofbaum?
Yes.
Commissioner Ginnam.
Yes.
Motion carries. Next is the CHIL grant. Mr. Boyer.
Happy to report that we did apply for the CHIL grant and were awarded the $300,000 for the CHIL grant, and we will be working with Northwest Michigan Community Action Agency to get this program up and started. This puts money back in to help with rehab work for low and moderate income folks, and the guidelines will be out. Hopefully, we'll start this up in May.
Good.
So this tonight is to accept that grant.
Questions for Mr. Boyer? If not, looking for a motion.
I move that the Emmett County Board of Commissioners accept the CDBG CHIL grant in the amount of $300,000 and authorize County Administrator to sign any required documents to receive these grant funds and implement the program.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Questions? Seeing none, roll call, please.
Commissioner Ahrens?
Yes.
Commissioner White?
Yes.
Commissioner Coates?
Yes.
Commissioner Loughbaum?
Yes.
Commissioner Mapes?
Yes.
Yes.
Commissioner Gutowski.
Yes.
Motion carries. Next is the Javis system update for the district court and probate court. Mr. Boyer.
We started in 2020 updating our courtrooms. We have completed two of those updates. This is the solution that we have in the courtrooms that does all the audio and recording and saving and documenting what happens in the courtrooms. It's a compliance issue that we're having to complete. We've got two more to go, so district court and probate are the two courts to finish this total project up, and the costs are below. District court's $55,682.62, and probate court is $59,397.48.
Any questions, Mr. Boyer?
I move that the board approve entering into an agreement with Justice AV Solutions to provide audiovisual systems in the amount of $115,086.10, pending a suitable agreement determined by civil counsel and the administrator, and authorize the county administrator to sign the same.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any questions, comments? Seeing none, roll call, please.
Commissioner Gutowski?
Yes.
Commissioner Ginnam?
Yes.
Commissioner Mapes?
Yes.
Commissioner Loughbaum?
Yes.
Commissioner Coontz?
Yes.
Commissioner White?
Yes.
Commissioner Ahrens?
Yes.
Motion carries. Last item in new business is the Equalization Department Training Agreement.
This is agreement for one of our new staff coming on board. This is agreement to help train him on our GIS system. The person we hired is experienced, but in this specific application, we have put in training up to 24 hours. I'm not sure we'll use the entire amount, but the cost for the training is $4,500. And this will bring him up to speed on our GIS system.
Any questions for Mr. Boyer? For motion.
Mr. Chair, I move the board approve the agreement with Avenia to provide 24 hours of training and authorize the county administrator to sign the same.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Seeing none, roll call, please.
Commissioner Loughbaum?
Yes.
Commissioner Mapes?
Yes.
Commissioner Ginnup?
Yes.
Commissioner Gutowski?
Yes.
Commissioner Coontz?
Yes.
Commissioner White?
Yes.
Commissioner Ahrens?
Yes.
Motion carries. We now move into appointments, and the first item on the appointments is a resignation from Scott Kennard. We need a motion to accept Mr. Kennard's resignation.
I'll correct? Make that motion.
The motion, is there a second?
I'll second.
Motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. And you have posted that on the website, correct?
Yes, sir.
Next is the Construction Board of Appeals. We have three current members that are asking for a reappointment. They have all applied. There are no other applications. What is your pleasure?
Chair, I make a motion to reappoint all three.
And I second it.
We have a motion to second. Is there any discussion?
Is there
just three positions?
Yes.
There are just three positions?
Yes.
Any other question? Hearing none. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Parks and Recreation Board. We have two posted applications and received a third in an email from the clerk today. It is your pleasure.
Mr. Chair, I move that we appoint Dave Batchelor to the open seat.
A second.
We have a motion, a second. Any other? Hearing none.
Chair, I believe he didn't he serve on the Parks and Rec Committee when he was a commissioner?
He did, and he was chair of it.
He's chair of it, okay.
Any other questions or discussion? If none, motion to appoint David Batchelor as member of the Parks and Recreation Board. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Mr. Batchelor is appointed. Next, the Community Corrections Advisory Board. One application that the clerk said has been open for quite some time. We've seen the application from Sean Manigan. Seems to fit what we're looking for. What's your pleasure?
That's a position for media and communications, I think.
It's
correct.
It's specific, right?
How does that fit in with his application is what I'm curious about.
Well, he is the public affairs official for the beach, DFW, I'm sorry.
Okay. That's what I would assume. What's the board's pleasure?
He does have a CGA degree, too, it says. So, or actually a master's in MPA. Make a motion to approve.
Is there a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion?
I'm wondering if that position is really needed. It's been open for quite some time now. Who has been doing who's been filling that position lately? Anybody?
We haven't had that position filled. I think there's several positions still open, and those are positions that we're trying to fill.
Are they designated by state law, or is it just what we wish to have them?
They are.
Okay.
Okay.
So there's requirements put on these things, and I think that's the challenge of filling these positions, to try to find someone. Like on construction resource, we need a builder, a plumber. We need those specific traits, and sometimes it's challenging to find those folks.
So my understanding of it is not that this person will be in charge of media and communications, but it's somebody from media and communications in the community.
Correct.
So I'm just a little... I don't know, Mr. Madigan. I'm just a little leery of having a place for a media communications person and not appointing somebody who's for media and communications. There is the possibility of it's been open for a while, keeping it open until somebody from media and communications applies. But I have no, he seems very qualified for something, you know. So
I think the unfortunate part is our media folks in this community are very few and far
right.
to come by.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the issue of why we haven't been able to get somebody. Yeah.
Any other discussion? We have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Hearing none. Mr. Madigan. Historical Commission.
Chair, I'd make a motion to appoint Becky Goodman.
Also,
I have a motion and a second. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing, hearing none. All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed, same sign. We are through appointments and to communication. Mr. Long, you said you had a communication.
Oh, yes. A while back, I just heard the very tail end of a local TV news report about 12 illegal aliens in Sault Ste. Marie. I called the mayor a day or so after that. His name is Don Jerry, and I wanted to get his version of it. He said their bus was stopped in Traverse City due to some strange driving. They were seen in Myers in Sault Ste. Marie. They were picked up by the Border Patrol out of Sault Ste. Marie. They have been processed by the feds. They've been given their papers and released, and they have not been seen since. I think that we should be concerned about this in Emmett County. I'm wondering if we should declare Emmett County to be a non-sanctuary county. That's all I have on that.
Did they say where they were from originally?
No.
Okay. So they could have been Canadians.
What's your vision of a non-sanctuary county, and what would that entail?
Well, my idea was just to have the county board here declare Emmett County to be a non-sanctuary county and notify the state and also the federal government.
And what would that mean for you? How would that change anything in Emmett County?
Well, I think we have a duty to keep the citizens here safe.
How would that make them safer?
Well, I think it would discourage both the state and the federal government from sending illegals into Emmett County.
Do you expect the state or federal government to send illegals to Emmett County?
I do at some point, yes.
In what capacity?
I'm not sure what you mean, what capacity.
So the state is going to send undocumented people to Emmett County for what purpose?
No, they're being shipped around by the federal government, but the state is usually notified. Sometimes the county is notified.
Only person I've heard shipping illegal aliens around is the governor of Texas. He's quite proud of it.
If the federal government is going to do something, and it's legal for them to do that, do you expect us passing a resolution to stop that?
What makes you think it's going to be legal for them to do that? They're shipping people all over the country illegally.
The federal government just admitted that they flew in more than 300,000 people by airplane from other countries now illegally.
Undocumented.
Yeah, that just came out last week in the national news. Okay, Emmett County Regional Airport Committee meeting, Tuesday, February 27th. We had a moment of silence for Jimmy Cann. A lot of us have lived in Emmett County here for a long time. We remember the old Cann Travel Agency. Jimmy Cann passed away, and we did have a moment of silence for him. The business was pretty much routine. The fuel sales were down from last January. But the good news is that the passenger report is up 3% due to the larger planes. And starting in May and June, there will be 4 flights per day out of Pelston. And also, I might mention that Tom Fairburn, the chairman of the board, his dad passed away shortly after that meeting. And he was a member of the Emmett County Planning Commission here for several years. That's it for the airport. For the Emmett County Planning Commission regular meeting, it was held here March 7th. We had a heavy agenda. Case number one was Patricia Stewart. Special use permit was postponed. Number two, Brian and Martha Morgan, special use permit, accessory building as a main use, passed. Number three, Ironwood Construction for Jennifer Van Lynn, special use permit, accessory building as a main use in Center Township on Bonter Lane. That was denied. Next case was Walt Sherman, special use permit, accessory building, passed. Next case, Tyler Penrini, special use permit, home-based business, in Carp Lake Township was passed. Next case was Tim Davis for 213 properties, preliminary plan unit development. Stetsonville Road in Friendship Township was passed. Next case was Kyle Wright for K. Wright Holdings, special use permit. Anderson Road, Bear Creek Township, postponed. Dan Park for Thomas Van Avery, special use permit, accessory building exception. Lampkin Drive in Redmond Township was passed. Next case was for the auto repair shop across from the Pelston Airport in McKinley Township. He is not yet in compliance with the code, and his case was postponed until he becomes in compliance. And the next case, Shoreline Architecture for Four Livies LLC site plan review, was withdrawn by the applicant. And that is my report.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Aaron.
Okay. Chair, I think, I don't know how, myself and you went to the EOC meeting training on Friday, March 8th. It was about a two-hour meeting, and we learned about how prepared we are for major emergency in this county. And we're moving towards being much more prepared. So that's pretty much the state of that meeting. Did a Zoom call with NACO for the Veterans Committee, and they announced the VA has this, they call it, the title is the 4+1 program, and the core of it is about employing military spouses. It's called, they have a veteran military spouse talent engagement program and employer of choice for vets and spouses also. And it's to keep people that, or actually support the families of our veterans when they get moved around the world, assignments. There's only about a 50% employed spouses of vets, or I mean of service members, and because it's difficult for them, because their spouse gets redeployed somewhere else, and they got to pick up and go, and so it's been difficult for them. So they want to retain all the knowledge of the vets as well, and the experience of the spouses, because it's an asset when you have people come to work in those places. So that's what that they're just announcing that program. It's a new program. Let's see. And we had a brief legislative update about the Guard Act, which is hiring our heroes. It's H.R. 1139. That was the cost of that was covered under the recent passage of the they call it the minibus, not the omnibus, because it was only six budgets. So that was covered. The cost of that's covered for the next year. Let's see. Health Department was held March 5th. We discussed rotating the location of the meeting, and that was not approved. The logistics and the costs just seem to be really, doesn't make any sense. It'd be nice if we could accommodate rotating meetings, but at this point we can't. We had discussed the hire of a breastfeeding expert, and we approved that. That's to be paid for by, they've actually done a year-long study of how to pay for that. This expert will be able to get reimbursed, the department will be able to get reimbursed for hiring this person, because they can apply for grants and such that the other people that are currently working with them that don't have this level of expertise can't apply for it. So we discussed Commissioner Mason's resolution to reinstate Jairus Rubing on the board, and that was shot down because we didn't, the chair quite eloquently expressed how a committee shouldn't tell a county how to do their business, you know, how and who to appoint, per se. And that's what I have today, Chair.
Mr. Aaron, Mr. Mapes.
As part of, I'm at, carrying on with the health board. I'm part of the program and evaluation committee. We did meet for the first time this year to discuss bylaws. Dan Thorell, the health department director, has asked for an update on bylaws. Felt some changes were needed, so we directed him to. We had that meeting after the health board meeting at 1 o'clock. Could have had it sooner, but it seems how 1 o'clock was supposed to time for that meeting. We thought we better wait till 1. Anyway, so we sent him back to work on those changes and then call a meeting of the program and evaluation committee meeting to go over those changes and then bring it to the full board for approval once the changes were made. DPW meeting met March 7th at 8:30. We approved the financials and got into old business regarding the Part 115 solid waste update that's in process. Things are moving right along with that process. It's full except for one position. Also, as part of that update, we need to decide if we're going to go together with other counties or not, or do it go it alone, as we've always done. And Andy recommended that we do it alone, and we supported her in that. That way, we're able to make decisions for the best suit in our county and not necessarily get tied up with somebody else's. We're kind of in a unique position anyway with our processing facility and transfer station to make the best kinds of decisions for our own solid waste management program. We still have a processor opening. We're looking for a processor still. Going out to RFPs for a planning consultant to help us with this solid waste update. There's a lot of interest, so we should have a couple finding somebody to help us with that. Also, it was reported to us that the one of three solid waste service providers in the area have now consolidated into two. So now we have Waste Management and also GFL Holdings, who purchased Little Traverse Disposal. So you'll be down to two people to choose from if you want your trash picked up at your house.
I expect prices to go up.
I would be certain, yes. Andy's concern is that brings a lot of unknowns and may create some issues regarding our solid waste ordinance, because it's going to be really, really hard to track the movement of all their trucks. So I suspect that's a plan that's in the works to try to figure out how to do that. Also, our license to operate expires in July, and before that happens, we are going to be required to apply for three licenses instead of just one. One for the trash, one for the recycle, and one for the pickup, curbside pickup, or hazardous waste, So that expires in July, so she's working on getting those taken care of. So that meeting was adjourned to 9:05, and the next meeting will be April 4th at 8:30. Road Commission was canceled on the 8th. The next one is coming up on the 24th. Networks Northwest rescheduled their March meeting, which was scheduled to take place next week on the 19th to April the 19th, because they have hired a new director for the organization, wanted to give him a chance to get his hat, you know, get all of his ducks in a row before we met. And then I probably don't have to make any more Babelowski committee reports for a while, because that Babelowski meeting will be meeting next week on the 21st at 8 a.m. That's all I have to get up.
So after our board meeting on the 4th, I went to Springvale Township meeting and attended that meeting. The following day, I attended the Littlefield Township meeting. And then I went to, on the 12th, I had the Crooked River Locks Association meeting, which I'm the chairman of and reappointed the chairman of. I think we've already heard the update. Ryan did a good job on the update on that. and it's good to see some forward progress on that. And they're talking about getting a generator and portable bathroom facility, possibly getting the water going. So anyway, some forward progress there. And then yesterday I attended the coffee with the inspectors. Before the coffee with the inspectors, we had the construction resource meeting, and I attended that with Dave and Marty and the gang as they were setting up for the coffee with the inspectors. We had a discussion on the public comment forum, and I think we're working our way through that. And then that brings us to today. That's my report.
Okay, Parks and Rec, we met March 5th at the fairgrounds. We did review the proposed design of the playground that we approved tonight. Pretty neat design on it, and it sounds like that's going to be a pretty good project if we can get the funding. Staff has been busy replacing rusted joist hangers and stringers on the decking on the rec hall at Camp Pedasiga, and a new drop ceiling has been discussed that at the new equestrian building has been installed and greatly enhanced the acoustics of the room. Attendance at all the parks is slightly down from last year so far this year. Don covered the DPW very well. Airport meeting, in addition to what Chuck said, we did get a chance to take a look at the new fire truck. And Ryan Batchelor is working with all the other local airports in the area to pick a new fire suppressant for the new fire truck. Once you pick the fire suppressant, you can't switch it, and we don't want to use the old PFAS suppressant, so he hasn't picked it yet as of our meeting. We had a meeting of the fairgrounds on March 7th at Epler Road EMS building. The Trace Atkins concert as of that day sold 1,426 tickets, with a little more than $132,000 in revenue, and there were a little more than 1,100 tickets remaining to be sold. Discussion was held on the logistic of the refreshment stands for the gold and silver sections during the concert. The proposed reverse raffle event that was going to be held during Fair Week, we decided to postpone that until the winter months to not interfere with the fairground activities. And risk assessment meetings are continuing to maximize the safety at the fair. That's my report.
Mr. Coons.
The Brownfield Redevelopment Authority met on March 6th. The discussion and agenda items focused on the Maple Block Flats project. The highlights were as follows. The developer and consultant are expecting a response from Eagle soon regarding their work plan. There was a discussion of the term short-term rentals in the agreement, which will ultimately be defined by MISHDA, we found out. The fund allocation for Fishbeck, the consultant, that's to be paid from funds received by the developer. Fishbeck is reviewing the application process and will soon produce a document for application and procedures for bidding, I believe. And there are several potential bidders for demolition work and a walkthrough for those interested in bidding as scheduled, was scheduled for March 7th. So there, I guess, there were quite a few people interested in that. And that's that.
Chair, Commissioner Laughlin brought up an idea to me for the meeting. I think it's very appropriate to have a moment of silence for the gentleman that served on our planning commission for so many years.
I was going to mention that also. Mr. Fairborn was a personal friend, and he did much for, besides the planning commission, he was a referee for Michigan High School, and did many things for Lansing and Littlefield Township. So before I do my report, I would ask for a moment of silence for Tom Fairborn, Sr. Will be missed. My report, first, we had the Board of Area and Aging in Northwest Michigan met on March 7th in Traverse City. The main item and only item was the audit presentation for fiscal year 23. We received a clean audit, but we used about $200,000 of our $4 million fund balance. It was needed because of additional costs associated with going back face-to-face, and much like Dave Love's, how we get reimbursed from the state of Michigan, which is also being reviewed. Ryan covered the Emmett County Fair. One also item we discussed was new cash handling practices are in place for 2024. Pam brought those forward for better security and record keeping at the fair. Both Chuck and Ryan covered the crash Belson Airport. I would like to mention that we toured a very state-of-the-art crash fighter rescue truck that I hope will never have to be used. Parks and Recreation has been covered. Emergency management met on March 8th at the Epler EMS station. We talked about the opening the Emergency Operations Center and the duties of various individuals and agencies present, and we discussed steps that would need to be taken if an emergency was declared. And that's my report. Anything else from the board? If not, public comment. Anyone wishing to address the board has 3 minutes. Please come forward. Second call for public comment. Seeing none, the announcement is the next Board of Commissioners meeting will be held April 8th, 2024 at 6 p.m. right here in the Board of Commissioners room, 200 Division Street, Petoskey. Looking for a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
A second.
Motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? They're adjourned.